Hello. Welcome to our verse-by-verse in-depth Bible study with Bible teacher Dr. Bob Utley. Now, here's Bob.
We're going to be in the Table of Nations today and the Tower of Babel. So we're going to be in Genesis 10 and the first part of 11. Genesis 10 is a wonderful passage that shows not only the inspiration but the antiquity of the Bible, as well as the wonderful sources or revelation that was available to Moses. Now, I must admit to you, there are some discrepancies here when you compare this to Western linguistic analysis of the origin of peoples. But now, hold on a second. Much of the conflict between the ancient world and the modern Western world is not only in the content, but the way we look at things. It seems to me that Genesis 10 is primarily geographical. And modern ones try to make it primarily linguistic. Exactly the period we're dealing with here, we're not certain. It has to be late enough that these cities have nations have developed. So obviously, chapter 11 comes before chapter 10 chronologically. Now, exactly what period we're talking about, I'm not sure. But I think it is an ancient witness. I think it is an accurate witness given the criteria on which it is based and not judged in light of modern linguistic only ethnology. Now, with that in mind, let's take a minute to look at the structure of chapter 10 before we get into the details. Because it's going to be quite detailed. It seems the three sons of Noah are not mentioned by age, though that may be true that Japheth is the oldest. But they seem to be mentioned in concentric circles of who is closest to the chosen people, sons of Seth. So Japheth is reversed because he's farthest removed. He's going to be covered in verses 2 through 5. If you look at a map, the early spreading out, which is a play on the word Japheth, seems to be north of the Fertile Crescent, all the way over to the Mediterranean coastlands, all the way over to Spain. Now, Ham is mentioned second in verses 2 through 20. Now, he is south of the Fertile Crescent, all the way from the coast of the Mediterranean, North Africa, all the way through Arabia, and even over into the southern reaches of the Fertile Crescent. Also, we're going to conclude with the line of Shem in verses 21 and following, but the particular line of Peleg, which is going to be the line that Abraham comes from, is not going to be dealt with until the closing verses of chapter 11. As usual, the Hebrew paints in broad strokes and then come back and fills in some of the detail primarily connected with the Messianic line. If we see that, it'll help us tremendously. It has been asserted that there are 70 countries here. Septuagint has 72. Some modern commentators count 68. Around 70. Now, many of us believe that's connected with Deuteronomy 32:8, where the children that originally went into exile with Jacob became the nations of the world. Now, you may buy that or not, but some believe it was connected with Luke 10:1, where Jesus sends out the 70, which was representative of missionaries going into all the world. And there may be some allusion to that. The rabbis say there are 70 languages of the world. With that in mind, let's go to the text itself. Oh, one more thing. Many of these names are plural, which show that we're going back to an ancient ancestor that became the father of nations. And I think that's just the structure of the thing. You can criticize that in the light of modern research, but boy, this chapter is astonishingly accurate for an ancient witness. I think it just shines for the inspiration of the Bible. And the commentators who make a big deal out of, well, this is not exactly right according to modern theory, in my opinion, miss the whole thrust of this. Now these are the records of the generations of Shem, Ham, and Japheth. Shem, first, not because of age, but because the line of Messiah will come through him. The sons of Noah, and the sons were born of them after the flood. And the sons of Japheth were, now here's a series. They're very important because they're used so often in millennial schemes. Gomer, Magog, and then we have Tubal and Meshech a little later. Now, Gomer seems to be a development of what's known as the C-I-M-M-E-R-I-A-N-S, Cimmerians. Now, they apparently, you see them in Ezekiel 38:6. Homer, in his Odyssey, chapter 11, verses 13 to 19, mentions them. They seem to be in the area of Asia Minor and possibly north of that, and apparently spread out northward. Now, we see some of that in even in Europe today, where C-I-M-B-I seems to be a group in northern Germany, and C-Y-M-R-I seems to be in Wales. And so we can see this spread across northern Europe. Now, Magog, Ezekiel 38:2-6, 39:1-2, make them at the far north. But friends, this is, in context, this is not Russia. This is the Black Sea, along modern-day Turkey in that area that we're talking about. Now, some say that they are the Scythians of the southeast of the Black Sea. And that seems to be as close as we can get. Now, then we have M-A-D-A-I. Many think that's the Medes southwest of the Caspian Sea. Then we have Javan. Now, this is the Ionic Greeks, we think. Daniel 8:21, Daniel 10:20, Daniel 11:7. Now, this is spelled several different ways. In Sanskrit, it's J-A-V-A-N-A. In Old Persian, it's J-U-N-A. On the Rosetta Stone, it's J-O-U-N-A-N. But it's obviously the Greek peoples, okay? Now, we have Meshech, Tubal and Meshech. Now, these groups, some think they are Eastern Asia Minor, maybe Western Asia Minor, and right in there. And others think they are southwest of the Black Sea. That's Herodotus. So they're not, we think, Russia today, this country, much further south, at least in this time. Maybe they spread north, but at least in this time they're much further south. Then T-I-R-A-S. Now, some say it's the Etruscans. Some say it's a Aegean pirate nation. And Rashi says it's Persia. Well, that's a perfect example that we don't know where all these are. We can get the big strokes, but we can't get the minute details. Now, verse 3. And the sons of Gomer were, now here are three of them. The first one, Ashkenaz, that modern European Jews calls themselves by this name. And many believe they are Scythians, or the German barbarians. Others say they are people around Lake Urima, R-U-R-U-M-I-A. And that may be true. I'm just not sure. Now, Ripha. Now, who is that guy? Well, some say they're by the river R-H-E-B-A-S. Others say they're near the Bosporus. Pay your nickel, take your choice. You say, well, Bob, where'd you get all this from? Well, I certainly didn't get my little map out and figure all this out, I guarantee you. I had a couple of helps. The first one is the Wycliffe Historical Geography of the Bible. That was very helpful. But one that's even more helpful than that is in the Interpreter's Dictionary of the Bible, Volume 3, on page 235, it mentions the ethnic divisions of man. Now, that was very detailed. But I must say to you, men that I trust very much, like Albright and this man who wrote for the Interpreter's Dictionary of the Bible, none of these guys agree 100%. We've just lost a lot of this. And if you assume the Bible is authoritative and inspired, you take one line. If you assume that you've got to look at extra canonical sources, you take another line. And often they disagree because of that. Josephus says one thing. Herodotus says one thing. Philo says one thing. We're just not certain. It's really, really pretty hard. It's a can of soup. The last name here, Togarma. Some think it's Cappadocia. Some think it's Phrygia. Some think it's near the city of Carmish, where the fateful battle between Egypt and Assyria and Babylon was fought. That's as good as we can get. The sons of Javan. Now, here are some of the Greek tribes. The first one, we think, is Cyprus, parts of Cyprus. The second, we think, is probably Spain, at one of the ports in Spain, developed by the Sea Peoples. Kittim has always been Cyprus, primarily the eastern coast of Cyprus. And the last word, starting with a D, many think, because of the close connection between the Hebrew D and R, that it should be an R, and it applies to Rhodes. Others say it refers to northern Greece. Others say it refers to southern Italy. Well, you can see the problem here. These are the Sea Peoples that came out of the Aegean area. Now, and from the coastlands of the nations. Well, this is used sometimes, this phrase in Hebrew, for a metaphor for faraway places. But it seems to me, as you look at this, this Japheth tribe took the northern swath from Europe all the way through the Fertile Crescent, and that, which would be the coastline, the northern coastline of the Mediterranean, that's what I think it's referring to. Notice in verse 5, it shows the four different ways that this chapter is divided. First, it's by their geographical lands. Second, it's by their linguistic characteristics. Third is by their ethnic background. And fourth is by their political structure. Now, that is very detailed. We see it there in verse 5. Now, in verse 6, we come to Ham. And first, there was Cush. Now, Cush is going to be discussed in verses, I believe 6 through 12. And then Mirazrim, and that's going to be Egypt. There was a Hittite king by this name during the reign of Ramses II, but I think it's not it. 13 and 14. Put's not going to be discussed much, and Canaan will be discussed in 15 through 19. Now, Put seems to be East Africa, Southern Arabia, Libya, Lydia. We don't know where it is. It seems to be North Africa. Now, here are the sons of Cush. The sons of Cush were Seba. This seems to be an Arab tribe in the Upper Nile region. And excuse me, not Arab, just the area of the Upper Nile. Then Havilah is mentioned in two lists, and I'm going to get to that in a minute when I deal with that, which seems to mean sand people, which probably the Egypt. And then we have Septah, which is probably Ethiopian, or a city of Arabia, similar to that name. And then we have Ramah, which seems to be the Sabbateans in southwest Arabia. Then we have another Sabetcai, which some say is Persia, on the Persian Gulf, east of the Persian Gulf, but I'm not sure. The sons of Ramah were Sheba, which is southwest Arabia, and Dedan, which is Arabia. So it's Arabian tribes through here. Exact their locality, I'm not sure. Now it breaks in a historical kind of little break of one man named Nimrod. Now he's said to be of the Cushites. Now, Cushites and Cushites are so close that they link them together here. Now, whether that's strictly ethnology or geography, I'm not sure. But there's two groups. One seems to be in Ethiopia, Arabia, that area. And the other one seems to be over at the headwaters of the Tigris-Euphrates. Two different groups. Maybe the same ancestor that migrated, but two different groups. Nimrod's the one that's over in the Tigris-Euphrates. Now, the word Nimrod seems to mean revolt. So says Rashi and Leupold. And they interpret this in light of revolt. Others say it's just a man's name, okay? Now, he's called a mighty one. It's the root Gibur, which means mighty. Some say in the sense he is mighty in the sense of a tyrant or a conqueror. Others say he was just a great hunter, maybe like one of the giants that we looked at back in chapter 6. Now, it says he was a hunter. Some say he hunted men, going back to tyrant or rebeller against God. Others say he just hunted animals and was very renowned. Even God took notice of his hunting skills. But I don't think God would take notice of hunting skills, so I think it probably fits. This guy was an evil tyrant, the first real political power in the world, and so he is the beginning of the world systems that are going to be developed later on in Daniel and the book of the Revelation, because he's going to develop the area of Babylon or Shinar, which becomes the great whore and beast in the book of the Revelation. Now, some say it's related to a king called Tukulti-Ninurta I, which lived in the 13th century B.C. But that's much too late for me. This is much earlier than that. And so I think people are looking for examples in the Bible to fit known events, like the Tower of Babel. They try to fit to some ziggurat in Babylon. I think it's much earlier than that, of which the ziggurats are a later development along the same lines. Now,
Notice here, list the cities he developed. Babel and several cities here. All of these are in the area of Babylon and Assyria, that fertile plain through there, the area of the Garden of Eden. Okay. And those verse 11, and he went forth into Assyria. Now that's New American's translation. The Septuagint, the Vulgate, the Syriac, Luther, and Calvin all think it refers to that Asher went out. But context seems to imply that Nimrod also built in the area of Asher, which is Assyria. A couple of more cities are mentioned to the north, and they are very big cities later on. So it was obviously written after they become large cities, but when, I'm not sure. Then in verse 13, we start delineating some of the line in Egypt. Mizraim is plural. Most say it means upper and lower Egypt, but we're not certain. And he had several children. And really, we're not sure exactly where these folks are. In your outlines, I've put some notes. We see northern Africa around Egypt is what we think, but we can't be certain. And verse 14 is the same developing. Some say the Philistines are from the wrong place here. They should be from Cyprus or Crete or something like that. And here they're said to be from another source. Now we've got to remember this. Follow me carefully. This is basically geographical. And many times people would invade another people and become incorporated in their culture. And so it's not so much who is of a specific racial lineage as it is who was in a geographical location and caught up in a racial culture. And I think that explains a lot of the discrepancies here between modern list and the list in the Bible. Okay? For Amos chapter 9, verse 7 says they come from Crete, and this says they came from Egypt. We know they settled in Egypt. This is one of the movements of the sea people. Phoenicians, Philistines, all of those sea people moved around quite a bit. Now in verse 15, we come to Canaan and his sons. Now there are several tribal units listed here. And the Canaanites are listed in several different ways. There's two names. Some there are seven names. Some there are 10 names, but most often there are only six. Let me give you the two. The two are found in Genesis 13:7, Genesis 34:30, and Judges 1:4-5. The seven names are mentioned in Deuteronomy 7:1, Joshua 3:10, and 24:11. The 10 names are found in Genesis 15:19-20, but most often it's six tribal groups that are said to be the inhabitants of Canaan. We're focusing in on them because they're the ones that are going to impact Abraham and his children most. Now, Sidon is, of course, the Phoenician port city, and I think that's very important we see that. There's two groups of Heth, which later became the Hittites. It seems to be a non-Semitic name, and these Hittites are found around Hebron, and then later on, very much the north in the area of the Orontes River. Now, the Jebusites are the inhabitants of Jerusalem and the Amorite. Now, there are two collective terms. Canaanite is a collective term meaning lowlanders, and Amorite's a collective term meaning highlanders. If you want kind of a summary of their allocation as far as geography in Palestine, you might want to see Numbers 23:29 for a good overview of how these tribes were spread out. We have the Hivite, which seems to be one of the Hittite groups in central Palestine. And then we have this Arkite, which seems to be north of Sidon. And then a Sinite, which is a city in the same area north of Sidon. We've got in verse 18, the first mention seems to be an island group north of Sidon. And several of the groups we're not real sure of, but seem to be north of basically area of Syria later on. Okay? Let's see. Notice Sodom and Gomorrah, Adamah and Zeboiim in verse 19. These are the cities of the plain, southern Dead Sea, that were destroyed later on. Lasha, Jerome says, is east of the Dead Sea, but we have no idea. And then it comes down to the descendants of Shem. And again, verse 20 is a summary of the different ways he's dividing these people up. It's funny that Israel's left out, Edom is left out, Moab is left out, but Peleg is going to be taken up in greater detail in chapter 11, and we need to hold for that. And that says, Shem, the father of all the children of Eber. Now, Eber seems to be the root for Hebrew. Now, whether Hebrew is directly related to the Egyptian documents, H-A-B-I-R-U, which seems to be someone who passes through, we're not real certain. Hebrew is a larger name. Included Semites. It was larger than simply the Jews, but how large, we're just not sure. You might want to see chapter 14:13 for the use of this Hebaru, which we found many Egyptian stele. Now, it mentions Elam. Now, of course, that Elam is far over, even east of the Fertile Crescent. And how it got in here, we don't know, but it's very far east. Then we have Asher. That'll be Assyria. Then Arpachshad would be northeast of Nineveh. Lud is possibly the Lydians of Asia Minor. That's what Herodotus says. And they claim that they were Semites from the city of Nineveh. They claim in their own historical documents, but we just can't be sure. Aram is going to be the Syrians northeast of Palestine that are going to be so prominent in Israel's history. Now, several of these are mentioned in both the Hamite list and the Shemite list. Now, what are we talking about? That's true of Asher, and down in verse 28, Sheba, and down in verse 29, Havilah. Apparently, it's not just ethnic, but it's geographical. Maybe the nation split or half the nation migrated. I'm just not sure. I'm going to go down to verse 25 where Peleg is mentioned, for in his days the earth was divided. Well, now this seems to refer to the Tower of Babel, the dividing of languages. It's usually translated Peleg means division. Now the Hebrew literally means irrigation canals, but it's a popular etymology for division of the tribes, apparently by the confusion of their languages. In verse 26 and 20 through 29 is various Arabian tribes. Their exact locale we're not sure of. Now, let me go to chapter 11, which begins what preceded chapter 10. Now, chapter 10 is a wonderful historical division of humanity, but the primary theological truth is all peoples come from one ancestor. If you don't buy Adam, you got to buy Noah. We are all brothers in a sense of physically. And I believe God wants to make us all brothers spiritually through Christ, too. Now, chapter 11 and following deals with another example of the rebellion of man. Nimrod's an example of that. Cain's an example of that. Lamech's an example of that. Now, here is another example of men getting together on the plains of Shinar, Babylon, the first civilization. And I think it's why the Bible uses Babylon as an example of the anti-God world system that'll culminate in the book of the Revelation. Now, it says they journeyed east. It means they pulled up stakes, literally. I think they moved from the mountains of Ararat, and so they're moving toward the southeast to the great plain of the Fertile Crescent. And notice they're coming together. They say four things. Let us make bricks and burn them thoroughly. And they use bricks for stone, and they use tar for mortar. This fits so historically accurate. There were no rocks on this plain, so they made bricks. Then they killed them to make them really strong. And they used, now King James has slime, but it's the word tar, asphalt, bubbled out of the oil from the ground in this area. Still there. Very good construction material. Then in verse 4, here's the real exegetical fight over what was the Tower of Babel. Here it was. Number one, they wanted to build a tower whose top reached to heaven. Number two, let us make ourselves a name. They wanted a reputation. Number three, lest we be scattered abroad. Now, the tower and the city, many connect with the Ugarots, the worship towers of Babylon. But I think it's much more ancient than that, though I think we see a true historical fulfillment in these ziggurats of Babylon that worship the stars. But what we have here is not trying to reach heaven, but simply that man is going to build a monument to himself, and he's going to defy God's will to be scattered. He says, I'm not going to do God's will. Philo even says they wrote their names on every brick they built to show their solidarity. Now, it seems that God's saying, well, boy, they're going to take over and do more than I want them to, but that's unfortunate. God is acting in mercy here to split them up, lest in their rebellion they continue to stay far away from Him. So it's God acting in judgment to thwart man's plans to rebel against Him. Now you say, well, what about the plural in verse 7? We've seen the plural in chapter 1, verse 26. We've seen the plural in chapter 3, verse 22. I think it's an incipient form of the Trinity. I think it part points toward a plurality in God. If you want my full discussion, send for the tape on the Trinity I've done. But I don't think it's the heavenly council or the plural of majesty. I think it's an incipient form of the Trinity. It's very anthropomorphic. God did not need to come down to confuse them. He's God. It's just speaking of God as if he were of man. I've done a tape that deals with God language, which I've entitled The Femininity of God, that I think would be a real helpful tape for you to send off for. They call the place Babel. Now, the etymology from the Babylonians is the gate of God, Babili. But from Hebrew, they say it means Babel, confusion. Now, Babel may be a popular etymology. The Hebrews often did that, make fun of the foreigners and their gods. So it's not a technical scientific one. But it does, the fact that this is where the languages were confused and man was dispersed. We see Babylon becomes a symbol of anti-God system in Genesis chapter 11, in Daniel chapter 3, in Isaiah 47, 8 through 13, and completely fulfilled in Revelation 17 and 18. And that's what I think we have here. Now, a further delineation of Shem's line begins in verse 10 and through the end of the chapter. We're moving toward the person of Abraham. Notice Genesis is 50 chapters. Only the first 11 get us all the way through history to Abraham to start a kingdom of priests to bring all the world to himself. The whole purpose of chapter 10 being in the Bible is that God's concerned with all men. And he's going to work through one man to bring a kingdom of priests. Now, the problem is they turned inward instead of outward. So God made the church to turn outward. We are meant to be a kingdom of priests. The same terms used of Israel in Exodus 19 are used for the church in Revelation 1:6 and in Peter. Now, so I think we have Babel, another example of man's rebellion. God coming in grace to move rapidly toward the messianic line, which is going to be the ultimate redemption of man through the seed of the woman. Well, look at these books. They'll help you. It's a difficult chapter. Bring your map to class. Kind of show where these places are if you can. The broad strokes are best. I've enjoyed being with you. God bless you.